Welcome to the Naked Podcaster. Get ready to hear stories of someone brave enough to bear it all. Let's get naked.
Welcome to the Naked Podcaster. Today I have Karina Cantas on. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I adore you. We know each other from your Behind the Pen and just people linking us up together. So it's so fun to have you on as a guest. Thank you for being
thank
here.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have a couple websites of yours up. I love that you're very diverse. You have many spokes of the wheel. One of them is Urban Hype 101, and we'll have all the links, so nobody needs to worry about that. And the other one that I have up is KK Author Assist, and it's your Author Assist program. But you also have several Facebook pages that you've done a really good job at kind of taking the pieces of what you do and separating them a bit with different pages so that we don't get lost in the Does that make sense?
Yes.
Jump in. Tell me about every single one of them, the podcast, the books, the whole thing. I can't wait.
Okay, well, I'm an author. I'm a contracted and a independent author. My first book that I ever wrote was, got them here, In Times of Violence.
Show us. Yay!
Young adult, motorcycle, gang kind of, outsiders kind of book. And I actually wrote this after reading Outsiders, Essie Hinton's Outsiders. I couldn't find much rebel fiction in the library and I decided there was a market for it. And this was before Sons of Anarchy came out and thousands of women started writing about motorcycle bikers. I was out there first.
So yay.
Just get that out there.
Yay.
Next book was Lawless Justice, which is about a vigilante group of female bikers. They are professional women during the day, doctors, lawyer, everything. But at night, when those leathers go on, they become the vigilante kittens. So that was the next one. Then I got nagged by my readers to do a sequel to In Times of Violence, which is Huntress. So that carries on the story from the first book, In Times of Violence. And then we came to Road Rage. And what Road Rage started out as, I wanted to do a different kind of MC. I wanted him to be official superbike racing team, like what you see on the circuits.
Yeah.
So it started off with Rage being an official licensed team. And the main character actually comes from an outlaw biker motorcycle group background. And she joins them and becomes a racer with them until her past catches up with her. Now, there wasn't supposed to be an outlaw biker group in this book. They pushed their way into my story. I was like, what the hell are you doing here? You know, you're not supposed to be. I'm supposed to be writing about a different kind of motorcycle club. But they pushed their way in, like the outlaw motorcycle clubs do. And so the book became both types of bikers. And then we have Stone Cold, which is a different cover now on Amazon and anywhere you see it, that's the old cover. And it's okay. A novella, but it's very biographical.
Okay.
Apart from the supernatural and the murders, because I've never killed anyone in real life. But it's lovely being able to kill people off in your book. Amazing.
I should try that sometime, actually.
Yeah, it's very therapeutic. Heads and Tails, a collection of short and flash fiction, just won an award for recommended read of 2020. Thank you. That has a story all on its own. And I'll go back to that after. Then there was Undressed, which is, again, I call it Undressed like you do with your Naked podcast, because I'm revealing more of myself in here. Mm. More of my warped mind, more of my memories and stuff that I've been through. And there are excerpts, poetry, everything in this little book here. And then we have the contracted paranormal romance duology.
Okay, so
illusion reality.
I bought and downloaded, that's what I was just looking up, Illusional Reality. I bought and downloaded that one and Toxic.
And The Quest is the follow-up.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. Toxic, yep. Which I don't have. Oh, yes, I do have a copy of. What am I saying? I'm saying I don't have a copy of it. It's right in my drawer because it is so cute. It is the pocketbook. Isn't it cute?
It is cute. Yes. I downloaded those two on my Kindle. It was hard. You have so awesome. Many books. It was hard to decide.
This is an erotica dystopian sci-fi, which you don't normally hear these genres together, but it works. I worked with another author on it. She kept hers clean. I went a bit spicy on mine. And we built such a new world that we decided we couldn't do just one book. And so last month we got together again on camera and we've nearly finished writing book two of Toxic.
Nice.
But you've got to get The Quest. You need to get The Quest.
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
Illusional Reality. So that's all my writing. Back to Heads and Tails. The reason I did Heads and Tails is when I first started out, I was looking for an agent and a publisher. Back then, there was no Kindle. There was no e-books. It was all paperback. And it was up to you to sell them. So I wanted to have like a CV of stuff that I've had published before I contacted any agents and publishers. So I got, this collection's got 28 short stories of fast fiction. 15 of them were previously published, which of course went on my CV. But because I had all these short stories, I thought, oh, why not put them into a collection? Now, as you can see, Heads and Tails, and you can also see a feather with barbed wire. It's because it's light and dark. There's a lot of dark stories in there, and there is some light comedy and romance, whatever, in there as well. And Heads and Tails came from, the idea came from, it's hard to explain. I'm a biker. I love rock music. I used to sing in a band. My favorite rock band is Iron Maiden. And their album, Number of the Beast, and Best of the Beast, I took their titles, not their song lyrics, their titles, and made short stories of them all.
Oh, wow.
And that's how Heads and Tails came to be. Of course, I had to change some titles so I'm not copywriting, but it wasn't about what their song was about. It was about the title and what I made from that title.
What a great idea. I love that. I was in a band too. That's so fun. We just learned new things about each other, but I've never ridden a motorcycle, driven. I've never been the driver. So anyway, how much of the books comes from your experience and how much, like you said, you haven't murdered anyone. But how much do you extrapolate?
It's there's always a piece of me in my work. I always leave a piece of myself. When they say write about what you know, that is what you should always do as a first-time author. Don't write about brain surgery because it's too much bloody research. But in times of violence, it was about being the only girl in a group of guys. And that's what it was like with my first love, my first boyfriend. He wasn't an outlaw biker. He was actually just a village. They're all a village group of teens that dabbled, had a smoke, all had motorbikes, went out every Sunday to the pubs. And it was just amazing to be part of that because I was the only girl in that group. And that made me feel special. You know, the guys treated me like one of the guys. I had my boyfriend there, you know, it made me feel really, really good to be part of that. And that's where In Times of Violence came from my own experiences in this group in a little village. But I wrote In Times of Violence, like I said, because of The Outsiders by Essie Hinton. She's the whole reason I became an author. She's the whole reason we have the Outlaw series, which are four books. And of course, being a biker, being a rock singer, singing in rock bands, you see things, you hear things. My mum was, I say, associated because her neighbour was going out with a Hells Angel. So, and they were like best friends. And so my mum was always had bikers around. So even though I haven't actually been a member of a club, I've always been on the outside of an outlaw bikers. So I basically know what I'm talking about in my books. I don't sugarcoat it. It's raw, it's gritty, it's violent, because that is what life is like. There's entertainment, you have to, it's a book, you've got to put your entertainment and a romance, throw a romance in there as well, you know, keep everyone happy. But they're very, very true to life, my MC Outlaw.
I'm excited. I was so excited to download it. I wish I had read it before we got on, but that was not possible. But I'm really, I mean, I had heard about you and we had chatted, and I wasn't entirely sure what to download. So I just went with those two. And that's always a good start, at least. So tell me about Urban Hype and Author Assist, the two websites.
Well, Urban Hype is my website, but I do more promotion of other authors' books on there. You can see about my books. You can see links. You can also read all the reviews before Amazon snatches them and takes them away. I have them on my website. They'll always be on my website. So Amazon can go and do what the hell they want because I have my reviews on my website. and there's a couple of articles maybe on there, but it's mostly promoting other authors' books, new releases, some bands. If I meet some bands because of the radio show I do, I meet unsigned bands, and I do some blogging for them on my site as well. So I share that basically with other readers. Author Assist is my business. This is where I help other authors, everything from the start of an idea right through to the publication, the marketing, and the promoting. I don't just do what they need doing if they're hiring me to go and promote one of their books. I want to show them how to do it themselves. So I teach my clients so they don't have to come back to me. I don't want them to come back to me. I'd rather them know what they're doing and they can go off confidently and go and do their own Amazon ad on their book, and they can do their own graphic because I've showed them how to do it. A lot of authors don't have the time to do these little training sessions and just want to pay me to do the job and get it done. That's fine. But Author Assist is started because I wanted to give back what I've learned to other authors. And yeah, I mean, I do everything. I have about 30 different services. It's like an a la carte menu where you pick and mix what the author needs. And they'll tell me, I need this, I need that, I need that. I'll add it all up, maybe give them a discount, and we'll get to work. Before I work with an author, I do it face-to-face because I need to know that we have that connection. There's a lot of trust. They have to give me passwords. I have to trust them that they're going to listen to my suggestions and advice and follow it or not. It's up to them, as long as they listen. And you know that rapport when you speak with someone, you know if you can click or not. If that doesn't happen, then I'm it's not about the money. I'm sorry. I don't think this is going to work between us.
Yeah.
So I have to have a face-to-face if I'm going to be working. If I do like one service for them, that doesn't matter. But if I'm working for them for a month or doing a lot for them, I need to have that rapport with them. And through the time we work together, we have webcam meetings where we go over stuff, show them what I've done, tell them what we've changed, what they need to do. And the rest of it is really basically on Messenger. We just talk every day on Messenger about things and what needs doing. And anytime they want to have a face-to-face, they just let me know. I'm straight on Zoom. I'm always there for my clients, even when the service is finished.
Yep.
If they come back to me and say, I didn't really get that, I've tried, but I can't do it. Right, we'll go through it again. No problem. If they come back to me, I really need help with something else, I'm there. I'm there for them 100%. That's what I do. I work 10 hours a day with AuthorAssist, 5 days a week. I love what I do, but because I'm at home anyway, this is the perfect job for me because I don't work. This is my job at home. It's like when you have a 9 to 5 job and you don't see your family, you're out of the house. Here, I have a 10-hour job or 12-hour job, but I'm always around my family. I'm always around my kids. So that makes it really good as well to be able to work like that.
I love working like that. I've worked like that for over 4 years, and I absolutely love it. So I know we're recording this. We're recording this in the end of September 2020. So we're also 6+ months into a pandemic where now everybody's learning about what it's like to move your business online. So I felt like everybody joined my party, you know. I love what you're doing with AuthorAssist because having written a book, I remember being told, well, there's one more thing you need to do. And I'm like, how many one more things are there going to be? Because one more thing just keeps happening and happening and happening and happening. And when you've never gone through the process before, it is completely overwhelming. You don't really know what you don't know. And the marketing part of it is a completely separate thing that I'm thankful for the way that I wrote and marketed my book. I wouldn't take back that experience, but I will not do it the same way again moving forward, right? So, because you just don't know what you don't know. So it's
exactly
incredible.
So many people are bringing out books every single day thinking that they can write. Not everybody can write. I'm sorry, but hands up, not everybody can write.
No.
But the ones that are very serious and want to take it further, they've published a book and they don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
How do I get my sales? How do I get my reviews? What do I do next? And that's what I'm here for.
I love that. Let's jump back in time. I'm going to stop myself right there because you have a podcast also.
I do have a few things going on. Yeah.
We're not done here yet, everybody.
First of all, I have a radio show on the Artist First Radio Network. That came about after being a guest on their show and the station manager asking me if I wanted to do my own. And I was like, holy shit, you know, I wasn't expecting that at all. Do I have the confidence? Do I have enough people? Am I going to get guests? You know, there's just, I was like, when you have a chance like that, whether you blow it or not, you take it and you run with it and you see how it goes. Because if it turns into nothing, at least you've tried. And I've been going 3.5 years now. And
wow.
I've had Yay. New York Times bestsellers. I've had famous actors. I've had news casters, some real big names on the show. And in between I have two guests in the 1 hour. Try and squeeze as much as I can. In between, in the actual break, I make sure that I have a independent rock band that's not signed, that are indie, featured in the break. And then I talk about their song and about them and give links. And because I'm into rock music and I used to sing in a rock band, I wanted to give that chance to other people. It's such a huge, huge platform. Artist First Radio Network is huge. We're talking 40,000-50,000 listeners, not on my show, but on the big shows that are on there. So that's carried on for 3.5 years, and I'm still doing that. And then I thought I would love to do the same thing, chatting with authors, chatting with artists, but face-to-face, because it gets more intimate. And I don't want it, when I do a radio show, it has to be scripted. I have to do my research. I have to know what I'm talking about. With Behind the Pen, I don't know nothing about this person. I don't even check their name online. Hi, who are you? And let's start right from the beginning and we just go off. And it can go off to outer space or it can stay in the same lane. I don't know until we start talking. It can go from 20 minutes to an hour, depending on our rapport and how we're doing. And I love behind the pen. I love doing that. So I did that as a YouTube show. And I'm also now turning behind the pen into audio podcast. So it's a YouTube show and it's audio. So people get the chance of, the guest gets a chance of getting a lot more promotion that way.
Yeah, I agree. I did this podcast started out audio. And then I realized I'm recording the video anyway, because I always had video, just like you said, you really connect with the person more. So it was mandatory that everyone was on video, but I didn't use the video for anything except to connect. And then I thought, what a freaking waste that is. I should, you know, all I'm taking the same podcast and just putting it on video platforms, basically. So I did the exact opposite to that you did, but we both landed in the same place where you realize that this content, it's not very much more effort or time to get it on audio and video. So yeah, we were backwards. Okay. And I was on Behind the Pen and it was a blast. So now we can go back in time. Now we're ready. So jump back and tell us, because I noticed you have either you have an accent or I have an accent. So one of us definitely has an accent.
I'm from the UK. I'm over now in Greece. I've been living here for 27 years now. But I'm originally from the UK. My mum was half Irish. My father was Canadian. but I was totally British. Not from London, mind you, from Midlands in the UK. So that's where my accent comes from. And that's why Narrations KK does so well, because they absolutely love my accent.
It's true. That's very true. See, there you go. Okay, you grew up there. Now take me back in time and start jumping into the story about what happened to you in school in the UK, because I'm sure it's very similar to what happens in the US.
Yeah, I always felt like I had a target pinned on my back, no matter which school I went to, starting right from the lower school, the first nursery, right up to college. It started with, because I was living with my mum and she was very, she was on social security, didn't have much money, so we had secondhand clothes. And of course you get picked on for that at schools if you have secondhand clothes. And I was bullied physically and mentally in all of my schools. Even when I left one lot of bullies and went to a different school, I'd got bullied there as well. It's like I said, once you've got that target. And even when I moved out from my mum's and I lived with my dad, who was more well off, and I had the clothes, new clothes, nice trainers, nice new school bag, the bullying didn't stop. But it was a different kind of bullying then. Before, it was running home from school and hoping they didn't catch you because you'd get beat up from my middle school, lower to my middle school. My mum, she did all she could with the school, going down, complaining, blah, blah, blah. But nothing changed there. Then when I went to high school, which was an all-girls school, I had quite a nice group of friends. And but there was some jealousy between some of the girls and, you know, cat fighting goes on and what have you. But one day I went home, and this is actually in Stone Cold. I went home for lunch and I heard the doorbell ring. And when I opened the door, it was about five girls, and I knew them because one of them I didn't get on with. She was always known as troublemaker. The other ones were like my best friends. And what were they doing? we want to talk with you. We can either do it here or at school. And I made the mistake of inviting them in my house. I got accused of spreading rumors about that one girl that I know was a troublemaker. Meanwhile, the other girls were going upstairs, rummaging through all my stuff. They turned the TV on loud. They turned the vacuum on. They were just doing everything they can. But it all came to a standstill when I had a knife put to my throat. The girls had come back down and they were in the kitchen, and I don't think they realized how serious things had got. I think they were scared and no one tried talking her down. I didn't try talking her down. I just kept saying, I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't done anything wrong. Please put the knife down, you know. And just like that, it ended. Knife was back in the drawer and the girls walked out of the house. And I just...
I am so sorry, Corinne. I cannot even imagine.
I broke down and stayed in the kitchen. I couldn't move. My dad came home for dinner. If he'd been 5 minutes earlier, he would have saw all that. Mm-hmm. I told him what happened. He went straight to the school. The girls were suspended. It's towards the end of the school year, so I basically didn't have to see or deal with them anymore. But something like that, when that happens to you, it stays with you. And after that, and I went to college, and I assumed at college things would be different. You know, everyone's grown up. Everyone is more mature, and so there shouldn't be any problems. And I loved college. I loved the classes. I loved, I was getting on so well, more well on college than I was on at school. But there came a time when we went on a camping trip, activity weekend or whatever. Anyway, so this group of students that I knew, and I was part of the committee in the college. Like I said, I was doing really well there. And we all went away to Wales. And there was this one girl that was, didn't fit in and didn't try to fit in, and didn't want to do stuff and just making it bad for everybody else, you know, not enjoying stuff. We climbed a mountain, and the climbing up was difficult to begin with, but the climbing down, I didn't have grips on my trainers, and I actually slid down a little bit like I was on skis, and my face went straight into a rock that was protruding out on the path, and I fell back, and then I had the supervisors, like the real people who knew they were talking about, that were looking after us, come behind me and say, you know, how am I feeling? Do I feel dizzy, sick, and how many fingers and all that? And I was just shaking the rest of the way, all the way down the mountain. That day I was supposed to have done dinner, but I was in such a mess that I couldn't do that. And so, you know, the supervisor was one of the older committees from the college said, go sleep, go and rest. So we were in dorms, like bunk beds, and I was laying there, my back turned, and I heard a group of people talking about a girl, and I assumed it was the girl that everyone had been talking about from the beginning. And until I turned around and looked out of the window and saw the girl actually in that group, and my name was mentioned, and it was me they were talking about. and it wasn't nice stuff. And it was people that I thought I respected me, that liked me, were talking so badly about me. And I stood there and they didn't see me. I stood there listening to them until someone noticed, and it was like, oh shit. Again, that's in Stone Cold. So bullying, even in college, it followed me. And then we get to adulthood, falling in love with my husband, who was a Greek barman, came on holiday for the first time with my sister, met him. It was a chat up line. He worked in a cocktail bar. I asked for an orgasm. I had to do it. He asked how many. I said multiple. And that was our chat up line.
Wow, you win the award for that. Holy, that's great. Yeah.
We went to a couple of other bars that night, but then we went back to his. We were like, that's the best place to be. And it wasn't till the following day when we were walking around and they were actually cleaning the bar, and they called us over, me and my sister, to come and have a coffee with them. So we sat in the bar and we had a frappe, cold coffee like you do. And Spiros, my now husband, he said something and I turned around to answer him, and it was fireworks. His smile. So the rest of the 2 weeks I was there, we were inseparable. My poor sister had to go off and do stuff on her own, because we just, after the 2 weeks, I went home, quit my job, and came back to Corfu. And it wasn't easy. It hasn't been easy from the beginning. Had so much against us, with first of all his parents, because I was an English girl. They'd seen what the English girls do in Kavos, in the bars. I was never like that. It's my first time abroad, you know. I was a good girl with a saint, and it took a lot for them to realize who I really was.
Right.
I had that problem with his parents. Language was a whole different problem. I couldn't get round the Greek at all. And I'm 27 years and I'm not fluent yet. But I can go into conversations, broken Greek and what have you. But the thing was, every time we went out with his friends or cousins or whatever, they all spoke English. And yet they spoke Greek when we were out.
Mm.
So I'd be going to the toilets, just crying my eyes out, because I felt ignored. I felt alone. And I just wanted to leave, you know. So we broke up in our relationship, which has been 27 years. We broke up twice, and I went to the UK, back to the UK at those times. He actually came over and lived with me and my uncle, and actually got a job and worked in the UK. He told his family that, you know, you don't accept her, then I'm gone, sort of thing. We both lost our jobs in the place we were working. They were making redundancies, and we hadn't been there long enough to get any compensation, so we were out the door. When you get the sack like that, you can't go and have unemployment benefit. If you get sacked, you're not entitled to unemployment benefit. So basically, I couldn't even live in my own country. So there was no other thing to do than to come back to Greece. So we came back to Greece, but because he'd lived with me for 6 months plus, and he'd seen what my life was like, he made it so much easier for me when we both came back to Greece. Unfortunately, the stress of everything that had happened before and living out here and the language and not being accepted and what have you, it caused me to develop diabetes. Now, none of my family or relations have ever had diabetes. And we check that. This was actually caused from stress from living out here. The doctor wrongly diagnosed me with influenza and gave me all of this medication with syrups and sugar. And
oh no.
When I got to the stage where I was throwing up and I couldn't see and I had ulcers all in my mouth, my husband took me to a different doctor and he said, get her down to the hospital straight away. But he never said what it could be. So I was drinking Lucozade, which is like Gatoron, to give me energy while I was being taken down to the hospital. I collapsed on the hospital steps. And that's when they ran out with a wheelchair and took me to find out, you know, what was going on. And they said that if he hadn't have brought me in when he did, I wouldn't be here now. So that was hard to deal with, especially his family. Not necessarily his mum or dad, but other members of his family basically said that she's ruined, that you need to get away from her. You know, it's not a good relationship. She has diabetes now for the rest of her life, and you're going to be having to look after her, blah, 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 and get rid of her. Thankfully, he never listened to them.
What year was this? When was this? I know you were 18 when you met him. I don't know how much, how long after you met him. I'm just trying to, I want to make sure we kind of have a timeline because I know there's more to come.
Say 19.
You were 19.
About 19 when I developed diabetes.
Okay. So what year was that?
I don't know. I really can't.
That's okay. That's okay.
Screwed up.
I know the year you published your first book and when you started Author Assist. So keep taking us through the story.
Well, when I came here, there's two talents I have. I can sing and I can write. And I knew being stuck in a village for the winter where there was nothing, not even a cinema, I needed to do something. And so I thought, well, I can't do singing because I don't speak Greek and they don't have English singers in the little village. So let's take my writing more seriously. Mm-hmm. And that's when I went with the Vanity, made the mistake of going with the Vanity Press for In Times of Violence. I got burned pretty badly, paid money for books that never arrived and tried to get another book published and that didn't happen. And all the authors ended up taking this publisher to court. I couldn't because I was over here and this was in the UK. They won the case, but of course, when they go bankrupt, you don't get a penny. So the authors got nothing back out of taking them. And they changed their name 2 weeks later and came back out again. And thankfully, there's not much Vanity Press out there anymore. Okay. Thankfully, word got out and Lords came out and so we were more protected, but that was quite a bad burn because they were basically selling my book after I finished with them. So I concentrate on my writing and I work in doctor's surgeries as a receptionist, stroke nurse. I worked in travel office. I've worked in souvenir shop. All over the 27 years, it's not like 1 year I did something different. You know, I was like 3 or 4 years with the same people. What happened after the diabetes? When you have diabetes, normally it gets then related to thyroid. They go together. So then I had problems with my thyroid. And for those that don't know, it's a tiny little thing in the throat that controls nearly everything to do with your body. If you are overactive, you could lose your hair, you can put on weight, no sleeping. If you're underactive, you can, what's that one? The opposite one. Can't think, right? I'm stuck now. But anyway, so those two went together and I was diagnosed with thyroid as well as taking diabetes. Now, if they'd got me to the hospital in time, I'd be on diet alone and pills and probably be free of it by now. But because they left it too late and my pancreas had stopped producing insulin completely, I've been doing injections for a day since then.
Wow.
Insulin injections. And what happened is just every single year, something else came onto my list of bad health. And it just grew and grew and grew. And if I go through the list now, I have type 1 diabetes, I have overactive thyroid, I have fibromyalgia. Now, fibromyalgia isn't something you can take one pill for, because it's a condition of 20 or 30 different conditions. Mm-hmm. Memory problems, depression, 24/7 pain, heat problems, feeling cold, feeling hot. If I had it written down, I should have written them down, but there are loads and loads of things that are attached to what they call fibromyalgia. And fibromyalgia is actually Greek, and it means pain, because our pain receptive, like for you, stub your toe and you'll be an ouch, and it will go to maybe a 5. Ours would go straight to a 10. We feel more pain when there's real pain, but we also get pain all over our bodies. We have what they call trigger points, where when I was first diagnosed and she got me on the bed and she was pressing these places on my body, and I was screaming in agony. I didn't even know why until it was explained. And of course I did all my own research and what have you. So then you have a tablet for every one of these symptoms. I am taking, as well as my insulin, I'm taking 15 tablets a day.
Wow.
For pain, for insomnia, for just so many things. The diabetes got bad. That went to diabetes neuropathy, where the nerves are messed up. I have what's it called? Not repetitive strain injury. It's where you it's like your legs are sleeping and you sort of jump, but I can't remember what the damage
is. Restless leg syndrome. Is it restless leg?
Restless leg syndrome. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. That's caused from the nerve problem.
Right.
And I'm taking medication for that. But even if I'm 10 minutes late, my legs are jumping all the time. And it's got to the stage where my hands are also jumping. So it's not just restless leg syndrome. I've had so many tests. I have nerve damage in my leg, bottom and top. I have nerve damage in my neck. I have the spine No, discs are starting to disintegrate, I think that's the word. After I had an MRI, it showed what was going on there, why I can't bend my neck and wash up, why I can't. I can't be the housewife I should be. My children look after me. My 11-year-old girl, she's like my nurse. She knows all of my medications. She knows where I'm supposed to take them. She makes sure that I don't forget. She'll say, have you taken your tablets, mummy? She'll put them in the box for me and get them ready for me. My husband is not a typical Greek husband with the mentality of the woman should be behind the kitchen sink and the man should be working and not doing anything around the house. When I developed fibro and I couldn't do normal stuff because of pain, he took over everything. I have got so much shit going through my life right now. And I couldn't be more blessed with the family that I have. I thank God for my husband. I thank God for my amazing two beautiful girls. One's 16, off to college next year, university next year. And Alexia is 11. She actually has two published books out.
All right.
She published her first book when she was 8. She did all the illustrations and all the stories herself. And then she published her other book last year. They're actually free now. Right in this moment, which people aren't going to be able to go and get after, but they're free to download now. And she's in number 2 and 3 in the bestseller Amazon charts.
Oh my gosh, we have got to get the links to those. Holy cow, that's amazing. So in your 27 years with your husband, you have a 16-year-old and 11-year-old daughter. And I understand that feeling of helplessness. Is that pretty accurate in not being able to do the things that you want to
it's
do?
It's not just help. Yeah, it's not just helplessness. It's you feel lazy because, you know what your job is as a mother and as a housewife. And you're not able to be that. And it's not good. My kids had to grow up fast. They didn't get the childhood they should have got because they were looking after their mum. My husband took over, like I said, everything from washing, hanging the washing up, cleaning, brushing. I mean, I do, when I've got good days, I do what I can. But even brushing the floor for 5 minutes, I have to wear a neck brace straight after because the pain's gone straight from my neck down to my spine from the nerve problem. I have a walking stick. This was started 10 years ago. So I've had this walking stick, which it's embarrassing for someone young and who, like me, doesn't look like there's anything wrong with her, which has been such a big thing about this because people don't see. They can't know. And so if I don't have my stick with me, I don't have someone stopping the car to let me pass. If I don't have my stick with me, I don't have someone opening the door for me. This stick represents my illness. And I do need, I mean, when I'm walking, I do need the stick. I don't have it for show. I do need it, but it's bad that I have to have it for people to see that I have a problem, a disability. Mm-hmm. Now, when my husband built this house. We had one on top of the roof, and then we took the bedrooms from downstairs of the normal house and the roof and made it into another big house. We had spiral staircase going up, and from the beginning, I was having problems getting up and down. So we decided, okay, when you come down in the morning, you stay there in your house until you have to go up to sleep. Which is great. Twice, that was brilliant. But then it's just got so hard to get up there that he's made an extension. And I'm actually in my bedroom now, which he built for me. This is my new bedroom. It's like a freaking hotel room because it's got a bathroom attached to it and everything. It's so cool. Just so I have my bedroom on that floor where the kitchen, and I don't have to go up those stairs. And so he built this extension for me. That's how amazing he is. Now, all of that aside, going back to bullying, I live in a little Greek village with lots of English girls. So we'd get together, a group of us, and we'd go out, and we'd every Saturday we'd have wine and cheese, and we'd chat about our week, and we'd do other stuff together, and it was wonderful to have that friendship. One of my best friends was actually my birth partner when I had my first daughter, which was a cesarean here in the hospital. And her daughters were also bridesmaids at my wedding. And when I got ill, I was basically called a hypochondriac when the fibro started. Cyberbullying started from local people. And I was cyberbullied on Facebook. And I hid myself away for 5 years. I lost confidence in myself. And so I hid myself away. And I met another group of the girls, and they were so friendly and understood the situation. And we went out and, you know, went to the local winery and did the stuff that we did with the other group. And then the fibro got so bad that I couldn't go out much, and they stopped calling, and I lost everyone. Just disappeared from my life. They couldn't handle or didn't want to cope with me, and as I couldn't keep up with them, they just disappeared. And I've been alone since then. I've just had my family looking after me and my virtual friends online. They are my lifeline. We've never met, so they can't see who I am and not like me and bully me like everyone else has done, because we've never met. I think if we met, we wouldn't be friends. I don't know. Something's bad about me. I'm cursed. Maybe it's my aura. Maybe I have a bad aura. Anyway, my virtual friends are my lifeline. They are amazing. They're always there for me. I lost my dad 2 days ago. And I put a post up on Facebook, and the amount of people that posted, you know, and said, I'm here for you. You need to talk. And it's just overwhelming, the support that you have with people that you've never met. My clients, I've been with them, some of my clients nearly 4 years, working with them, 5 years, some of them, and they've become really, really close friends, you know. So we don't just work together. I can really give them, you know, my opinion on something, and they will listen. If they ask me something, and I will tell them, and again, they'll listen to what I have to say. And that's really good. I built my confidence back through OrthoAssist, because I was able to help people, and the feedback that I got back. And if you see
the testimonials are incredible.
Testimonials on the OrthoAssist website, that keeps me going. You know, knowing that I'm doing a good job, knowing that I know I'm not just pissing around and trying to get money off people and don't know what I'm talking about. That's not the case with me. I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm doing. And that's why I'm hired. And that's why OrthoAssist has gone on for 5 years now. But I've been 27 years in the business learning, and 5 years with OrthoAssist. And that gave me my confidence back. And one other thing that I mentioned before about singing, I love singing. And my husband works in a karaoke bar.
Yeah.
Not talking about now, because of course things are different with the coronavirus, but years before, I would be PRing. I would actually be singing in the bar to get people come in, because I could sing. I am what you call a semi-professional singer. And singing just gives me freedom. It makes me feel so good to sing. It's where when I got ill, I lost my love for reading and writing. It took me 10 years before I picked up a pen again. I used to read 123 books a year. I didn't read anything when I was first diagnosed. I lost my passion for things that I loved, but singing was still there. Singing was my outlet. And they started a rock choir last winter, and we'd meet up once a week with other girls around the island, not local people, thank God, because I've gone through everyone now. There's no one left now. So these are all people from all around the island that meet up in one place, and we sing. And some of them can sing and some of them can't. And it's amazing. And I love it. And then when the virus came, we had to stop. And hopefully, I mean, Corfu isn't affected like everywhere else. We've been very, very lucky over here. But I'm a high risk because of my illnesses. So I'm self-isolated and I can't. I've been out to the karaoke a couple of times. They close at 12 o'clock, which is unusual because normally it's 5 o'clock in the morning. And I have my mask and I have my antibacterial thing, and I go out and I sing and I do 3 or 4 songs and I come home and I feel great. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to get dressed up and to be able to go out. So I've been isolated for 5 months before I was able to do that. But I still got to be very, very careful. And I'm going over to the UK for my dad's funeral. And the UK is really, really bad over there. And I worry, you know, I worry for myself, because being on a plane, you've got the recycled air. Being close, I know my family, my siblings and that, I know they're free of the virus. I know that, but it's still a worry going to the UK, but I'm not going on my own. I can't do anything on my own. I don't even go to Cavos to the bar on my own. So Sophie will be having a couple of days off school, and she'll be coming with me to the funeral. And either Alexia or Sophie, they come with me to the bar and we have some dinner and then we go and have the sing song. Those girls can sing. They take after their mother. They took my songs. They teach my songs. They sing better than I do. So proud of them. So, I mean, they're both amazing singers. They're fantastic at school. They've got such beautiful characters. Like I said, Alexia, she's 10, with two books out already. Sophie, she goes to university. She's going to be doing computers, programming and stuff. So I am so blessed with all the shit that's gone through. I've gone through with you. I don't think I've left anything out. With all that shit, I still feel so blessed with the life I have. Because it could be a bloody catastrophe. I couldn't be married to someone like my husband, Spiros. I couldn't have the amazing children I have. I could be, but the thing is though, it's still going on every summer. Something else is being added onto my list of health. And it's like, I'm not getting a break. I feel like, what have I done to deserve all this? To be bullied, to lose friends, to be ill. Where there is no cure for diabetes or fibromyalgia, I shall die with these conditions. My health is deteriorating. It is. It's getting worse every year. Something else is added to the growing list. I don't feel like a hypochondriac because I have proof. I have the x-rays to show. I have the MRIs to show. You know, it's not like I want the sympathy and I am too lazy to do anything around the house. And God.
I love how much you love your family and how much of a support that they've been and how you have taken your situation and used what your passions are. I know you've taken breaks from writing, but you've really taken what skill sets you've gained and what your passions are and created this whole life, a business life. I want to wrap up and end talking about author assist. I know also people need to remember if they have a book out there, you can do reviews and promote them, that is a big part of what you do. Or if they're a good fit for the radio show or the podcast. But I want to focus the most on author assist and talk about, you know, what's the easiest way for them to find you? I know we have all of the links and I want to add the links for your daughter's books, but what's the easiest way for them to find you? And just know, if you're in the process of writing a book, you definitely need help. I can tell you that from writing a book. Like, don't feel like you're screwing up because you need help, because man, it is so much harder than you realize. So
the writing is the easy part.
Yeah, and the writing is the easy part.
The next part is where it gets really hard, and that's what I'm here for. But I get told off that I don't charge enough because of what I do and the hours that I work and the amount I've put into my clients. But I know what it costs to publish and market and do it independently. And I won't, first of all, I won't rip anybody off. That's 100%. Like I said, I'm qualified. I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm doing. But I won't charge like other VAs and PAs are charging. And I won't have hours like they pay so much an hour. If I'm online, I'm working for my client. And as I have severe insomnia and I don't sleep, that means I'm working many, many, many hours. I mean, they can catch me anytime, 4 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. They can send me a message on Messenger and I'll be awake. There is Kay Gantus Author Assist on Facebook, where you can contact me. Initially, do it through email, which is kgantusauthorassist@gmail.com. Let me know where you are in this cycle. Let me know where you need the help. And if I can help, I will. There are, if you go onto the website, kgantusauthorassist.wordpress.com, you'll see testimonials, you'll see the book trailers that I've created for authors, you'll see graphics that I do for authors, and I think I've put the narrations on, I'm not sure yet. But if you go to my YouTube channel, again, you'll see all of the book trailers and narrations that I've done for my clients, which is KK Narrations. And then you have trailers by Author Assist. You have Behind the Pen. Oh, I went to the wrong one then. Behind the Pen podcast. You can find that on my YouTube channel as well, which is just look at Karina Gantus and you'll find everything on YouTube. I'm on Instagram as Karina Gantus. I don't have a pen name, even though I write erotica. I'm still Karina Gantus. And you can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, where I live. I live in Facebook. I hate the place, but I live there. What do you think of the new design for Facebook? Tell me truthfully.
Oh, I don't get it yet. I think it's a clusterfuck, but
that's
a totally separate topic. Yeah, Karina, thank you so much for being on and being really raw with your story and allowing me to hold that space. I really appreciate you so much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I told you I'd be emotional. I knew I would. I cry the littlest thing.
That's a good thing. It's very raw and genuine. Thank you.